everyone, I'm Rohan Nagarny. Welcome to a very special edition of Open Floor. Today on the show, I'm talking to one of my all-time favorite basketball players. People who listen to this podcast know I'm a Miami Heat fan. And it just so happens we have a Miami Heat legend with us today. He's also an author, a father, a producer, an 11-time All-Star, a soon-to-be Hall of Famer, and a two-time NBA champion. Chris Bosh is here with us. Chris, how's it going, my man?
Oh, man, beautiful day. The summer's almost here. Things are starting to kind of reboot. You know, it's great. It's a good time to be alive, man.
Well, that's great to hear. We're going to do something special today. We're going to do a deep dive into Game 6 of the 2013 NBA Finals, one of the craziest, most memorable, best NBA games of the last decade of all time, frankly. Before we dive into Game 6, you wrote a book, Letters to a Young Athlete. It's a fantastic book. You've been talking so much about it, and it's really beautiful. It's really well done. It's been out for a little bit now. Can you tell me a little bit, what's the response been like? What's the reaction been like now that the book is out in the world?
People have been kind in their response. I will say that I don't deal with compliments very well, but it has been overwhelmingly positive. I've had moms of their children, you know, saying that they're going to give their kids this book because I have young athletes and I read your book. I'm reading your book rather, and this is so great. They need something like this. And you know, that was the intent of writing the book. I have, you know, such a special place in my heart for trying to really just for seeing youth evolve, and not only youth, because I know it says young athlete on there, but this is for everybody. It's it contains a universal message. These are things that I felt helped me throughout my success in my career, and I want to share my story. And a lot of it is just really, really thinking deeply and getting to a point where we had something, and then the physical book actually happened. And now I'm just hoping to get it in as many hands as possible.
Well, I got to be honest, it's a little bit of a pain in the ass to hear that so many people have loved your book, because I write stuff every day and no one seems to care that much. Here you are, you know, you theoretically don't do this for a living, and you've already written a whole ass book. You know, I've written a couple of little magazine articles, but not a book, you know.
Hey, it was a process, man. It was a process. It took 3 years. It was a 3-year process. It was a grind, and it still is. You know, it's going. I'm learning so much about publishing, the book publishing business, and things that have to happen, and what makes or hopefully makes a successful product in that area. So, you know, I'll be able to give you some pointers, hopefully. I'm sure all you got to do is put your mind to it, man. The minute you decide, like, yo, this is what I'm going to do, it's over.
Well, I really appreciate that. Like I said, the book genuinely is great. I encourage everyone to pick up a copy. It's called Letters to a Young Athlete. And also, if you can, pick it up at a local bookstore, especially after, you know, the year we've been through. Pick it up at a local bookstore.
Absolutely.
Me, personally, I will be going to Skylight Books in Los Angeles. It's not an ad, but it's just in my local bookstore. You know, go pick it up. All right, Chris, so I wanted to do something a little different. You know, you've been doing a lot of interviews for this book. Rightfully so. You've talked a lot about the book. But I was like, I want Chris to pick a game from his career, something for us to really dive deep into. Now, you did something great, which was you picked Game 6. I just want to throw out some honorable mention games that you could have also picked. Okay. Some of my personal favorite Chris Bosh performances. Game 7 of the 2012 Eastern Conference Finals. You were battling an injury against Boston that year. You come in, and you hit 3 threes in Game 7.
Yeah,
Doc Rivers wasn't ready for it. Doc Rivers was not ready for it. After the game, he's like, Chris Bosh is hitting threes. What are you going to do? It's like, listen, Doc, the man can shoot, all right? Another game against the Spurs, but it's actually a regular season one. 2013, you hit the game winner. And I was home from college that year during spring break watching the game with my dad and my brother.
That was a good one.
My dad yelled, my dad is a normally very quiet man, and he yelled, in your face, Tim Duncan.
Yeah, that was who wasn't playing? I think Bron and D were out.
Yeah, Bron and D-Wade
were
out.
Yeah, they were both out. Yeah,
that was a great game. And then another game where LeBron was out, your game winner against Portland in 2014. Another classic Bosch moment. So just some other games. If you like me, something I was doing a lot during the pandemic before things have started to get a little bit better, you know, people go back to the things that give them comfort. I would watch a lot of Big Three highlights, a lot of Dwayne Wade YouTube mixes, a lot of Chris Bosh, best game winners, most hype plays. So if you'd like to see some fun Chris Bosh highlights, I recommend those games. But we're here to talk about Game 6 of the 2013 Finals. Allow me to set the scene a tiny bit. Okay, the Miami Heat, the Big Three, was formed three summers earlier. You had lost the 2011 Finals to Dallas, but you come back in 2012. You beat Oklahoma City. 2013 was probably the best version of this team. You guys won 27 games in a row during the regular season. It's crazy to look back on the Big Three now because, you know, you guys were so, so good at your peak. But the best part about this team was that you guys were fallible. Was that, like, there was a moment every year where it was like, oh, man, these guys might actually lose. and I say this as a Heat fan, yeah, but that's what made it so captivating. But I want to ask, before we even get into the game, headed into this series, you know, you guys obviously had some tense moments during the playoffs against Indiana, et cetera. Were you guys confident headed into the 2013 Finals? Like, you know, I know 2011, I did a story with Dwayne Wade his last year, and I got to ask him a ton of these kinds of questions. And, you know, I think it's fair to say you guys were a kind of a different bunch headed into 2011 before that loss than you were the couple years after. But sure, headed into 2013, were you guys like, oh, we won 27 in a row, we're the shit, we're going to win these finals and get two in a row? How confident were you headed into that series?
You know, you always have to get confident. You always have to have confidence when you're at that level, right? And, you know, for us during that time, the peak of our powers, the 27-game win streak, you know, was intact, was wonderful. And then right after that, we were pretty much average. Pretty average after that. So we weren't going into the playoffs with a hot streak. And you know, we had a tough, I mean, man, those series with Indiana, I mean, you're coming out of that series licking your wounds. You know, it was an amazing, oh my goodness, talent. They were a talented team. It was an amazing series. The Indiana fans were always passionate. I mean, every time, you know, we had to beat those guys. And coming off of that, you can gain more confidence. And so for myself, I wasn't not confident. It was just my offense wasn't really, mm-hmm. It's kind of like the time where it's like, man, I've got to get back on track a little bit because it's been tough. That's the playoffs, right? And my job was always to figure out how I could fit in within the context of our offense. And, you know, going into the Spurs series, we knew first we were just happy to be back. We always understood how hard and how tough it is to be able to get, you know, to call yourself a playoff team. So when we actually got back there, it's like, okay, it's going back through the motions saying, all right, here we are. This is what we've got to do. We've got a new opponent. All the marbles are on the table. We can anticipate what's going to happen. And oh, yes, Tim Duncan and Popovich and Ginobili and Parker, you know.
and this Kawhi Leonard guy.
Yeah, this Kawhi Leonard kid. Yeah, this guy? Who is he? He's okay. You know, it turned out to be, you know, just the anticipation. You're always excited and you're always just feeling those nerves and those butterflies before everything gets going.
Okay. So it's not like me. You didn't think you were going to smoke them.
Oh, no. You know when it's going to be like, yo, this is going to be – we weren't thinking of how long. You never think of how long. You compartmentalize. But we know there is not much room for error in this series because anytime we play them in the regular season, it's a battle. So we knew what we were up for.
So headed into Game 6 – the Spurs are up 3-2, obviously, and it had been a weird series up until that point where you guys were trading blowouts for five straight games. And it was really strange. Like, it would be a close game for like two and a half quarters, then one team would go on a huge run. And I just want to commend Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy on this podcast, and I'll get into some of the things they said specifically, especially about you. Obviously, you have no idea what they're saying because you're in the game. But I watched the game again last night. To give you an idea of how many times I've seen this game, I actually own Game 6 and 7 of the 2013 Finals on iTunes.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. Me too, by the way.
Yeah. So, you know, Mike Breen is on top of it. Like, before the game, they run this graphic about it's been a series of runs, etc. And Game 6 was the first time you guys actually played a close game in the series. So it's the Spurs are winning 3-2. They're coming off a huge win in San Antonio. And basically they run you guys off the floor, right?
Yeah.
And Game 6, let's get into it. It starts, and the energy, the level of execution in this game is just, it's crazy to watch. And it's funny because I watched this, we're recording this on a Monday. I watched this game Sunday night after Clippers-Mavs Game 7. And it's crazy to watch this game now and see how much has changed in just the 8 years since you guys played this game.
Oh, yeah.
Where if these two teams played now, you guys would be switching everything.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron is such a different player. Like, the Spurs are dropping on all the pick and rolls, daring right. LeBron to shoot in a way they would not do now.
Right.
LeBron didn't have his turnaround fadeaway in the post yet, which he hits with such regularity now. And as a Heat fan, I'm always biased. I'm like, that was the best version of LeBron, and you guys just didn't appreciate him then because everyone hated the big three.
Yeah.
But you see him now at 36, and it's crazy to see how different this game is. But this is a celebration of Chris Bosh. But before we can even celebrate Chris Bosh, I have to bring this up. Tim Duncan, listen, he's a Hall of Famer. He's the best power forward of all time.
For sure.
He is working you in this first half, Chris. Or, I'm sorry. I think he starts off.
Yeah, but he had 22 and 11 or something like that. 22 and 10.
I think he had 25 points in the first 25. Half alone.
Yeah.
He started out 8 for 8, and I think seven of those were against you. Now, Spo didn't do you any favors by putting you out there on an island one on one. You guys didn't bring any doubles against Duncan, which I get. They had shooting elsewhere on the floor.
Yeah.
So Spo's putting you on that island, and Duncan, both blocks. It's like, oh, baseline spin. Oh,
he's working.
You take away the spin. He goes middle, paint fadeaway, other block, faces you up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this guy's so old. How is he doing this? I want to know, because there's one moment where he dunks on you a tiny bit and it looks like he looks back at you. Was he talking to you? Like, what was his demeanor like during this game? Like, is he trash talking you at all? Is he like, what is his demeanor during this game?
Tim, he had the laser focus. He was intense. Usually he's always intense, but you could tell that they had gave more of the onus on offense to him at that point. And, you know, they obviously noticed something in the film and said, all right, look, big fella, bring it home. And to be honest with you, well, he doesn't talk. He never talks smack, you know. Mm-hmm. But his physical presence, his strength, his intensity, you feel that. And for me, it's just like, yeah, everything I was doing was wrong. and then if I make one little slip, I think I'm that one you're referring to. Boris Diaw had it in the post, and he made a cut. I've never seen him make a cut before. And he cut so quick. He, like, backdoored me. Boris hits him, boom, Duncan. And I'm just like, oh my God, I am blowing this. You know, we went over this game plan and he is cooking me. Everybody knows it. I know it. And I just like, you know, I went into halftime just like, man, it was a gut check. It was a gut check. But I have to, you know, that we never wavered. The team always had confidence in me. We had confidence in our situation, and you can't let it slip at that point. And so for me, I had to figure out how to, okay, I'm getting killed. How do we stop the bleeding? Mm-hmm. And what can I do just to figure it out on the fly and just, man, just make it up, because nothing I'm doing is working right now. I mean, I felt that I was putting him in tough positions.
To your credit, Van Gundy says on the broadcast at one point, he's like, I like what Bosh is doing. I don't think that you were playing bad defense. I mean, first of all, he's the kind of guy that throughout his career is not someone who – he's any person you put on one-on-one in the post. I mean, he's having that kind of performance. You guys just couldn't double him because there was so much else going on.
Threes, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really funny watching this game. At one point, it's like 16-16 with 6 minutes left in the first quarter. And Mike Breen incredulously is like, this game might end up in the 120s. And it's like every game is like that now.
Yeah.
And it's also just wild to watch how much Spo had LeBron playing off the ball. Like the first play of the game is like you get open for your elbow jumper. You know, D-Wade initiates the action. And LeBron doesn't touch the ball in the first possession. Like, when was the last time you've seen that? Like, maybe that game? Maybe
Oh, wow. Yeah. Ago? I mean, yeah. Soon, I mean, we always try to have that open philosophy of, okay, getting everybody involved. And LeBron always has it too. Mm-hmm. It's just that the teams after that, they're asking him to do way more. With those teams, we could put him in a position where later in the second half of the second quarter, he kind of moves over to point guard, that point forward position with the second group. Mm-hmm. And that's when usually you see him get going. But in the beginning, between getting me shots or a shot or two, D-Wade handling the ball and Rio handling the ball, that's kind of – we got into our offense in that kind of way.
So I want to talk about Mario Chalmers at one point because I think he – I can't believe I'm saying this. I think he was the Heat's second best player in this game.
Look, hey, before you start, a lot of people, Rio won't get his credit. He's a great player. Mm-hmm. Let me not even try to say, no, he's a great player. You can look back at everything he's done. Anytime we had a big moment, watch it. He stepped up. Anytime, and in this particular game, he stepped up huge in the second half.
Well, your guys' best stuff that you were getting in that game was, Van Gundy points this out too, I don't know why I'm turning this into a Jeff Van Gundy podcast, but basically anytime LeBron is screaming for Chalmers or Chalmers is screaming for LeBron, those are the best looks you guys were getting all game because they're just playing so far off D-Wade. I love Dwayne Wade. You know, I got my Dwayne Wade cover. I wrote this story. It's over my shoulder here. This was not a D-Wade game, unfortunately. You know, he hurts his knee in the first quarter, and, you know, he never finds his jump shot. Joey Crawford's not giving him any calls. One thing I wanted to know, it's funny seeing young Spo in this game and how much he's changed as a coach. And, you know, I've had a couple conversations with him over the years. I don't think he knows who I am, but we've had a couple conversations. And it's interesting to hear him talk about his coaching philosophy now and how much it seemed to have changed because of what he went through coaching that team.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you could give me some insight into what was his like general demeanor during a game like this? Like, is he trying to play the role of motivator? Is he trying to get you guys focused on X's and O's? Like, how is he kind of managing a situation like this? Because I think he's so different as a coach now. And back then, I don't think he had the cachet he obviously does now.
Yeah. I think back then, I think we were all not in over our head, but this was our moment of truth. Mm-hmm. Right. For everyone, this is our true test. And I think sometimes in that true test, you know, that plan, that book of plans and everything you have, you ball it up and you throw it in the trash for everybody. I think his role, not so much in a motivational factor. We were motivated. You're in the finals. If you need motivation, then you're in the wrong place. You know, you're probably not going to win. He challenged us in particular, after that game three beating that we took, we found ourselves right away facing a 2-1 deficit on the road with two more home games. You know, I mean, excuse me, for the Spurs, two more home game for the Spurs role for us. And so I remember distinctly he was very animated. And when I say animated, I mean fussing, cussing and all that stuff. But more so challenging us just as a team and just saying, yo, this is what we said we were going to do and we're not doing it. CB, you said you was going to do this. Brian, you said you were going to do this. D, you said you were going to do this. We're not doing this. You know, this is crazy. And you know, he said what needed to be said for us to come out there game four and extend, you know, really extend our livelihoods because we knew if we lose that game, this team is going to be really, really tough to beat three times in a row. So let's not put ourselves in that position. Moreover, he was just himself. of course, we've all grown since that period, but you can find yourself when you're just in when you're in the foxhole, man, sometimes I don't want people to, you have your game plan, but like I say, sometimes you just have to use that intuition and make it up on the fly. Sometimes it's nothing that was just like, okay, we're just going to do some different kind of basketball. It was things that was within our characteristics, but you have to adjust and you have to, and you have to zig instead of zag sometimes. And we found ourselves doing that quite a bit in that series.
We're going to get to the last 2 minutes or so, which obviously is, you know, we could spend hours talking about those last couple minutes alone. I just want to ask real quick, because they put up a graphic coming out of the first half, and it's like the Heat's big three, okay? And it's like they have, I think, 24 points combined on 21 shot attempts. LeBron did not have a good first half in this game. Frankly, none of you guys had played pretty well. I was looking up the stats. Again, I'm coming into this, I'm a Heat fan. It's kind of shocking that you guys won this series. When you D-Wade and LeBron were sharing the floor in this series, the Spurs were killing you guys. I think they had like a 7 net rating almost with you, Wade, and LeBron on the floor, which is kind of nuts. And coming out of the first half of this game, you guys aren't playing pretty well. And a couple of times throughout the game, like, you know, during a timeout or whatever, you'd see a moment where you, LeBron, and Wade would kind of huddle together, etc. I'm curious, like, how often did you guys, or in that game, do you even remember, was there a moment where you, the three of you, maybe got together and had a conversation about something? Because it seemed like it would happen every now and then. Like, how much responsibility were you guys putting on yourselves, and what would you tell each other in those moments?
We, you know, of course, all the pressure's there, right? Playing the best team you've ever faced before, offensively and defensively. And knowing what you're doing right now is like, all right, we could do better. And if we don't do better, they're going to beat us every game. Constantly with the reason for, I think, game two, we won that by in the games week, they beat the crap out of us. you know, we were just more so in a position of like, all right. And I'm assuming when we were in those huddles, it was no grandiose thing. It's just the next possession, you know, moving on to the next evolution. That's huge. Those are some things that I mentioned in my book as well, just how important it is to move on to the next thing. And you work up your mind so much to where that's probably what we were talking about. If there was something, usually probably if we were huddling up, it was on defense and we're trying to figure out, or we've changed something and we're going back over what we're going to do out there on the court. Because we found ourselves constantly having to change our schemes on those guys because they were just picking everything apart. So we had to, every couple possessions, every couple quarters, we change some things. And so that's probably what we were talking about, especially if I was leading the conversation. It was definitely about defense. Offense, it became about D and Bron with the way they played me, you know, in our scheme of things. I wasn't a major focal point, and you saw how they were guarding. They were packing the paint, doing all these things. It was really on them, of course, them being our top two scorers, to get going and figure it out.
So headed into the fourth quarter, the Heat are down 10. Doris Burke is a wonderful woman. She only asked the coaches one question during their mid-game interview during this game, because I think even she was like, this seems absurd. Spo's like, we need the best defensive quarter we've had all season. And you guys are down 10. You start with the small lineup. Now, this is the best lineup you guys had all series. And I think you and Birdman were a little interchangeable, but it was LeBron, it was Mike Miller, it was Ray, it was Chalmers, and Birdman to start the fourth. And they go on this big run. They even take the lead. You come in for Birdman, and it's really good. Now, Spo brings in Dwayne Wade with about 4 minutes to go, and you guys have taken the lead at this point. And they say on the broadcast, they're like, that's the hardest decision you can make as a coach. When the other,
I remember Jeff Van Gundy saying that. Yeah.
And there's so many things they say in this broadcast that are like foreshadowing, and it's really crazy to hear them. Because they're right. As soon as he comes in, the offense just changes, okay? So I have it all written down. There's a minute 47 left in the game. You guys are up 89-86. And you've been playing so well in the fourth, it looks like you're going to get this to a game seven, okay? This is what happens. Tony Parker hits one of the greatest shots I've ever seen. He hits a step-back three over LeBron off a broken play, ties the game.
Yeah.
You guys come down the floor. Chalmers turns it over. Tony Parker comes back. He hits an insane turnaround shot in the paint. On the replay, Rio is this close to blocking it, okay?
Yeah.
They go up 91-89, okay? So five straight points. Come back down, there's a LeBron turnover. And you're like, uh-oh, this is turning into LeBron. You know, are we seeing some fourth quarter stuff going on here? They turn it over. You guys foul Manu on a fast break. Now they're up 93-89, okay?
Yep.
LeBron comes back down the floor, and it's another turnover. It looks like he's taking a floater, but then he looks at you like that was a lob. Do you remember this play? Because it looked like he was trying to shift the blame on you.
I remember it. Well, so just to kind of back up, when Tony Parker hit that three, our challenge and our game plan, that was perfectly in our game plan. We constructed our defense to have Bron on Tony late. So when they run this play, Bron's going to be over here, then we switch. We've got them in a position that we want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just thinking when we saw it, hell yeah, we got Bron on Tony. I'll live with the results. And he hits the shot. It's like, damn. You know, and then fast forward to that play when Bron threw the lob. I remember just we were running the play. And then
Ray Allen falls down in the paint, and now there's like six people in the paint, and it completely – Danny Green cheats off Wade because he's in the corner, so it's a total mess.
I mean, they're all – everybody was packed. And then so Bron throws it, and it just goes out of bounds, and he's looking at me, and I'm like, you've never passed me that before. I didn't even know that was for me. That was for me. I couldn't get it anyway, you know, and he was like – and it was kind of like one of those moments where you can't argue – there's no time for that, you know. It's just kind of like, yo, CB, what you doing? And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, we're just looking at each other like, what are we doing? You know, like, and that was kind of the moment when it shifted from not very hopeful to dismal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could hear it, you could feel it. You know, you could feel the air just go out of everywhere. Oh, it wasn't much left, but that was whatever was left.
It was quiet in the Chili's. It was quiet in the Chili's, Chris. There's a plate of half-eaten chicken tenders in front of me. And I'm like, again? These guys are going to do...
So that's pretty much what we were feeling, man. As soon as that happens, it's like, oh, you hear this collective groan. And then... we're reliving 2011, and then
I can see outside of the Chili's. You can see fans leaving the arena.
People leaving, and it's like, oh man! And it's like, it's kind of like this daze, and then you get back to the huddle and realize where you are, and you have a decision to make. You can just panic and start crying right there, or. Well, get yourself into the next play,
okay,
man.
Well, so LeBron misses that floater, okay? And it's a 93-89 at this point, okay? LeBron misses the floater. Manu's going to the free throw line. He misses a free throw, and Van Gundy says, or Breen says, Ginobili misses what could be a huge free throw. Okay, he's completely right. You guys call a timeout. Spo takes his final timeout. There's 28 seconds left. It's 93-89. And LeBron and Dwayne at this point are just full on arguing. And you mention it, you have to make a choice. Something I'm fascinated about in this situation with all athletes is how much doubt is creeping in and how are you fighting it? Because obviously I'm watching the game and I'm a diehard fan and I'm like, it's over. Like they've lost. I've seen a million NBA games and they, you know, they're going to play the foul game and it's not going to work. You know that. How do you fight doubt in that scenario?
You just move on to the next thing. So my personal experience, we go over, and me and Spo talked about this because after the series, the next day, I asked him like, yo, what was going through your mind? We all asked each other this question. And then like, for me, it's kind of, oh no, the shock. Oh, you start feeling the beginnings of the panic attack. But then we went back to the huddle. I'm just looking at everybody else just to see how they're doing. You know, Bron's biting his nails.
Yeah, the camera zooms in on LeBron on the bench.
And they're showing just the inside of his nose and his pores. I'm kind of just I'm punch drunk a little bit, just kind of taking the moment in. And I look at my wife, and you know, you start to trying to look at your family members to be like, you want that look to be it's okay. You know, you want that reassuring look.
I needed and that so at Chili's. I just at I had tear soaked.
You needed that
tenders.
At Chili's. Yeah. I'm not looking at you. Get back to those tenders, man. You know what I mean? My wife, she wasn't looking at me, and so then. Just that moment, it snapped me back into what we were doing right there. And so you just do the process. You keep playing the game until the game is over. And so Spo drew up a play. He subbed me out. And it's just like, hey, let's extend the game. We need a three. You know what happens if we don't make a three, but let's focus on this play right now. So everything goes into executing this play right now and supporting this play. And we were just totally in the moment.
Right. So you guys are actually down five. I think I said 93-89. It's 94-89. They've gone on an 8-0 run, okay? So you come in off the timeout. LeBron gets open. He sets a screen, I think, for a back screen for Ray Allen. There's so much attention on Ray. LeBron gets a wide open look at the top of the key, misses it. Dwayne keeps the ball alive. He gets a shot on the wing, nails it, 3-2-point game. And it's funny, on the next on the next inbounds, Duncan's going to inbounds, and on the broadcast, they're like, I don't like how close those ropes are to Duncan. They're not giving him the room. And it's like they keep bringing up the things that are going to be really important later.
Right.
So Kawhi gets the ball. He gets fouled. And it's hilarious because I watched this the same day he put away the Clippers in Game 7. And every time I'm like, give the ball to Kawhi Leonard. What are you doing? This guy's a machine. Yeah. But he wasn't that yet, obviously. And you could see how young he is in his face. And you could see it. And he looked so nervous headed to that free throw line. And he misses that free throw. And it's that that moment of life, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you guys, you have no timeouts left. You have to come down. LeBron takes a three. And, you know, Pat Riley describes this play in such beautiful detail in the foreword to your book. When you go and get this offensive rebound, and you know, I've heard you talk about it so many times. The thing that always amazes me about that play. So somehow, if you haven't seen this play, if you're listening to this podcast, I don't know how that's physically possible, but of course, it's a play where LeBron misses a three pointer. It's rebound Bosch, back out to Allen, his three-pointer bang. It's the tie game, the tying three-pointer. LeBron's wide open at the top of the key, too, and he's calling for it, okay?
Yeah. So is Dwayne.
Yeah. I'm like, not Wade.
Right.
did you even see those guys at that moment? Did you know you wanted to go to Ray right away? Like, that was what always blew me away about that play. Because I know the first person I'm looking for is LeBron James. Even if Ray Allen's on the court. Right. Like, how did you – was it split second? Did you even have a second to think about it? Is it all instinct? Is it all reflex? How did you know
to go there? It's a combination – yeah, it's a combination of everything. It's the training. It's the split second. He was the first person I saw. I think the other person I saw was Manu, which I think I knocked him down going for the rebound, but I just felt like a slight nudge in my right side. You know, that's what it felt like. And then I looked down and Manu was right there, and I look up and Ray, big eyes backing up. And you know, it was right there. And we had gone over plays like that before. And, you know, we always knew that the first mistake that bigs make is dribble it out to the three and just shoot that dumbass shot that never goes in. And so, you know, I would like to say I was aware of it, but it happened so quick. Yeah, he was just the first person I saw. So I was just grabbing a rebound and I heard him calling me. As crazy as that sounds, I heard him calling me that quick. And so I saw him and he was, you know, he was bagging up and he caught it in rhythm. Perfect play.
And it's really remarkable. You know, Ray's obviously telling him to get the ropes off the court, and it's pandemonium. The Spurs want to run the next play immediately, but the refs want to review it. The game ends up going up into overtime. I think a lot of people forget that you guys still had to win that game. Ray simply tied it. And the Spurs are playing well in that overtime. Like, they respond great to this. Now, here's where,
they
they do. Kawhi bounces right back. He's their best player in the overtime. He scored 4 points. They only ended up scoring 5. You get a couple of nice shout-outs during the overtime. Chris Bosch doing an excellent job against the pick and roll. Chris Bosch with some extraordinary plays on both ends of the floor. You have one play where you're switched out onto Parker. You stop him. You stonewall him completely. He dishes back to Kawhi. Mm-hmm. You jump out, challenge a shot. You block a huge Tony Parker shot. I mean, LeBron played 50 minutes in this game. You're pushing 45. I think you're up 47. Something that I think people don't – they take for granted when it comes to the big three specifically is, you know, Ray's talked about this. Dwayne's talked about this. That last year they mentioned, like, it wasn't fun anymore and it became so mentally exhausting. And people, when they talk about fatigue, I understand what they're talking about, because when people talk about fatigue, they always think physically, right? But what they don't count is the focus and how draining it is for how long you guys have had to focus in these playoff games. And the conditions you played under weren't like even the superstars who face pressure now. It wasn't like everyone in the world wants you to lose and your like entire life is going to be considered a failure if you don't win this basketball game. And I can't even imagine. Yeah, I mean that's at least how like certain bad faith pockets of the media treated it, right? Like,
yeah.
And you know, things have changed a little bit since then, but you know, there was so much pressure on you guys. The stakes were always absurd, and I can't even imagine the mental focus it required in that overtime. Are you even tired at that point? Like, how is your mind able to function in those moments? Because you're switching out onto Tony Parker. You're doing all these things, X, Y, Z. Like, how are you keeping your mind sharp in that moment? Because you're also on an emotional roller coaster. Like, I'm in this Chili's. I'm hugging strangers. You know, right. We're on an emotional roller coaster. How do you keep your mind sharp in that moment?
It's just clinging on for dear life, really. Clinging on to those hopes that you could still be successful. That's what it came down to. And that's why it was so important to train our minds and our bodies to be able to push ourselves. I talk about that in my book as well. When you ain't nothing but tired, you're going to have to learn how to push yourself past that empty, you know, sign or what you think is a sign. We were way past empty. And just so, you know, just every stop was difficult. Every score was difficult. I mean, you're tired, but you're somewhere in this euphoric state of disassociation between mind and body, but you can still feel a little of both. As a matter of fact, I know me myself, I was feeling mentally more than anything just because the angst of each play, it was everything was riding on a 1-point game, down one, up one, down two, up two. You know, it's just like, oh. And, you know, just the level of focus that it required to guard those guys. And, you know, and even, you know, okay, man, we've got CB on Tony Parker. He's one of the hardest guys I've ever had to guard. He's so fast. He hits you with like 18 in and out dribbles before he even makes a decision. And in that particular one, he crossed me pretty good and he got the space. He had hit kind of like a similar shot on Brian a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I knew he was going to pull the trigger. He just wanted space and pulled the trigger. And he had been, you know, hot. And, you know, I just wanted to make a play on the ball, just try my best to just get a stop. And if we get that, it's like, yeah. And like every play was like all the it required just so much energy, or it took so much energy from you. So, yeah, man, it's just when you're in it, you just find a way to survive. And that's pretty much what it came down for us. And so with that said, we just found a way to move on to the next play, find a way to survive. Oh, up one, cool. That means this, up two, down. But I do know one thing. After that game, I was ready to get the hell out of there. It's like, yo, I want to go home. I don't want to play anymore. We'll talk about game 7 later. This shit is crazy.
It was the emotions of that night, I can't even imagine. And people take for granted how difficult it is to deal with something like that. Now, you had said before game 6, because Danny Green, who gave me nightmares for years every time he took a three-pointer, was, you know, set a finals record at that point for three-pointers made. You said before game 6, we're just not going to let him score anymore. We're just not going to let him do it. Like, someone asked you, and you're like, that's it. That's all we can do. And you very famously block him on the last play. You throw your arms up in victory, and you can just kind of see the relief on your guys' face. And, you know, Doris Burke does a great job with LeBron in the post game, and I'd never seen him like that before or since. Just he was just, I think he was like, yeah, I couldn't really verbalize what he'd just gone through. Like, yeah, he's kind of laughing. I'm curious. I mean, I don't think you LeBron and, you know, D Wade are like texting each other every day. Like, remember that cool game we played in, guys?
Right.
But did you guys feel like you got away with one that night? Like, are you back in the locker room like, well, shit, like that was, we got lucky tonight. Like,
hey, hell yeah, man. And you know what? Like, you know what it means. I mean, really for the rest of the evening, you know, we had went during the playoffs, it's just everything is riding high and you're just on this wave. And so we worked the habit of going out to eat after every game. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't even talk. I was just kind of just in space the whole time, just with the thousand yard stare, just like, you guys don't even know what happened. You know what I mean? Like, this is crazy. We have to win it. It's destiny. But yeah, that never happens. I'm so glad that we were able to focus and execute. That shows you what focus and execution and practice and preparing yourself for the moment can do. But yeah, we got away with one. We're not going to get away with two. And if we won that one, we're destined. I just, that's what I felt. I said, this is our destiny. We're supposed to do it. I'm confident.
Did you, have you ever rewatched the game? Like, I'm curious, because I'm assuming you watch it for, oh really? Like, what's that experience like for you when you rewatch it?
It's just a trip watching just how close everything is. The chess match, it's like watching old chess matches and hearing it commentated, and just the stakes, like you were saying earlier, the buzz, you can hear it in the crowd, you can see it. It's just, you know, it's the big time stage, and that's how you want it to feel if you want to be in a classic. And you know, I always wanted to play in a classic series, be on a classic team. It's like that vintage year, you know, it's just everything was just right. You got the hole, you got the greats. You got the future Hall of Famers and Hall of Famers. You've got the storied franchises. You know, you've got the big city versus the small town or whatever. Oh, man. You know.
Oh, they love playing that up whenever you guys were in the playoffs, by the way. It was like every other team apparently – every other team had apparently never signed a free agent before whenever they played the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
It was so absurd. I just want to – a couple more things, and then I'll get you out of here because – I want to mention, either way, again, we're doing this because Chris has a new book out, Letters to a Young Athlete. We've referenced it a couple of times. And as eloquent as Chris has been on this podcast, there's so much great stuff in the book, and it's so well done. And like you mentioned, it's not just for young athletes. It was really wonderful reading this book. So please, go pick up a copy. Support my guy, Chris Bosch. I want to just do a quick coda here on the Big Three because – that next year, you know, you guys make it to the finals and you really were running on fumes. You know, I think Dwayne's body obviously needed, he needed to, I think he changed up his training and all kinds of stuff after that.
Yeah.
And you guys looked to me mentally fried more than anything else in that second Spurs series. You know, they came in highly focused, highly motivated, and you guys looked like a team that had been the center of the basketball world for 4 years and frankly looked like a little like, we can't take it anymore. You know, they asked me to write, like, on the 10-year anniversary of the decision for SI, you know, look back on the Big Three. And, you know, the question everyone wants to know, like, was it a disappointment? I don't think it was a disappointment. I think you guys were so captivating that made it worth it alone. But, you know, I remember Spo telling Lee Jenkins the summer when LeBron left, like, we had that team and we had it for 4 years, like, you know, yeah, we should have gotten more than two. When you look back on the totality of that experience now, obviously that's just one chapter of your life, and I don't think that's the defining chapter of Chris Bosch. You're a young man. You're going to go on to do so many more things. But when you look back on those 4 years, like how do you view that experience now?
The greatest. I mean, you know, of course, second to Kobe and Shaq, but probably the greatest. Just atomic bomb that the league has ever seen. I mean, so much to the fact to where it changed the game. And, you know, it's a fascinating question. You say, were we disappointed? Yeah, you're disappointed when we lose, but just to see people's expectations to have that question be like, oh, was it a disappointment because you only won two? Like, oh, yeah, we only did. Let me see what the back-to-back Pistons, the Lakers in the 80s, the Clutch City in the mid-90s, and the, you know, two Bulls teams and the Lakers teams, the two Lakers teams. Oh, we've only done what, you know, nine other franchises have done in the history of basketball. But yeah, no, it's cool. Making four finals, we get even slimmer. You know, it's hard. And when you get there, and by the way, I'm sure Kawhi will be in the Hall of Fame. How many Hall of Famers are they going to have on their team when it's all said and done? Like six, five. So yeah, we lost to a very, very good team, you know, on both sets, you know, at the beginning and at the end. Look, you just got to go for the ride. And if you get it once, man, that's great. You get it twice, you're able to defend their crown. We were able to defend our crown, you know, for 2.5 years, 3 years. And like that, that alone, who has that experience? You know, nobody has that experience. And you want to be in that position as a team to say, all right, cool. Well, if they beat us, then they beat us. And you tip your hats to them because you know how hard it is. But for those who know, man, it's one of the most difficult things to do in sports, and to actually stay together as a team, to stay friends, and just to have these great memories to look back on and say, wow, nobody has did it like us, and nobody will do it after that. I don't think that'll ever happen in sports history again. And that goes to the decision which led to the whatever you want to call it, the parade and all that stuff. Oh,
I was there. That was one of the best nights of my life.
Told people, like, yo, come on. We were just having fun. I understand the backlash and all that stuff. We were younger.
Backlash.
Didn't really think about it.
Whack backlash. But,
you know, if you were in Miami, if you were in Southern Florida during that time, yeah, come on, man.
Oh, come on.
That was like, yeah, it was an atomic bomb going off in sports and really in culture. And as we get further removed from that, I know we'll dissect it, piece it together, and know, like, okay, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Chris, I want to get you out of here on this. Obviously, you know, I write on a smaller scale for a living here. I don't have any cool books coming out soon, like this hot shot over here. I just want to know, you know, I sometimes when I write, I'm like, wow, this is going to go out in public and people are going to read it and everyone's going to judge my work. Yeah. You've lived that as a basketball player, now as a writer. Which one makes you more nervous? Like, how nervous are you putting something like this out there and knowing people are going to read it and have an opinion on it? Is it more or less nerve-wracking?
Yeah, I think it's the writing. The writing is certainly a challenge. You know, I've put – these are things that I don't have to feel. In basketball, you can guard yourself, right? What you see is what you get, and that's really about it. These are internal thoughts. These are internal struggles and internal beliefs, and nobody has really heard them. I mean, outside of my inner circle. So I'm bringing things to people that that I feel are important, that I think they can benefit from because it benefited me. So I want to share so that people can hopefully use it for themselves. And you know, it lasts forever. I mean, a book will be on the bookshelf a lot longer than people be watching game film.
Unless they bought it on iTunes.
Unless you buy it on iTunes, you know what I mean? ESPN Classic, all that good stuff. Unless your old man is just like a fanatic all the way. That's the way you only see it. But, you know, I wanted to do something. It's all about evolution and growth and really just the continuation of greatness, you know. And so that's what I aspire to do every single day. And I want people who read this book to take from those same principles, you know, aspire to be great every day because one day it's going to be over. But when you look back, you'll be proud of what you did.
Awesome. Well, Chris, I know you told me at the beginning you don't take compliments well. Let me say, I know for a fact I can speak on behalf of all Heat fans here. You're one of the most beloved players to ever put on the uniform. And I don't think that what you've done as a basketball player defines your life. I don't like doing that to athletes. You're more than just a basketball player, but I know that everyone is so happy for you. It's so great to see you on our TV screens and all the stuff you're doing with the book. It was great to read the book. We're all so excited for this next chapter of what you're going to do in your career, in your life. You gave so many people, I can't tell you how many of those playoff games I watched with my brother and my dad, and we talk about it to this day. Like, oh, we wish we were all in the same city, like watching the Heat again, or you know, whether you're hitting that game winner in Portland or against San Antonio, you've provided so many of those moments for people. Like, I honestly don't know. I see more like Dwayne Wade criticisms on Heat Twitter than I ever see Chris Bosh ones, because you're so widely beloved. So thank you so much for doing this, for talking about Game 6, for reliving it with me. If you have not read Chris's book yet, it's called Letters to a Young Athlete. I encourage you to go pick it up and read it. It really is wonderful. Chris Bosh, everybody, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, man.